one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue, I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available now. Buy it for your dad for Father's Day. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. Happy beautiful Friday. At least
beautiful Friday. Beautiful Friday. The Phillies just completed a season sweep of the San Diego Padres, just as we finished talking about how not afraid of the Padres we are. Maybe it's because, Liz, the Phillies are now, what, 24-7 against the Padres since the That's What's In video debuted in the 2022 postseason? Is it fair to say that that video was the downfall of the San Diego Padres franchise, Liz?
I mean, all evidence points to yes.
Yeah, exactly. You can't say that it wasn't.
We're California's second largest city.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly going to, I think, live as a historic moment in San Diego Padres history, assuming they've noticed. There's also a chance that people in the Padres end of this just have no idea. But those guys, as far as I know, have not been seen or heard from. If you are unaware of what I'm talking about, the Padres released a trash-talking video prior to the Phillies and Padres playing in the 2022 NLCS. It's just great. You should go watch it now. You can actually, when you watch it, you'll find out why exactly it led to the results it led to. It's very similar to the Nationals tweet about how easy it is to beat the Phillies, and their records against the Phillies since then has been absolutely terrible. It's definitely one of those types of moments. And here we are, Liz, on a beautiful Friday. Two great Aaron Nola starts in a row. Adolis Garcia is heating up, potentially. And like I said, you finished a season sweep of the Padres. It makes that series loss against the Dodgers feel like almost nothing.
It does. It's nice to have that firmly in the rear view, sandwiched between, you know, two butt kickings of the Padres. Not necessarily a butt kicking, but they did beat them in six straight games.
I wasn't going to raise an index finger and correct you, but yeah, I would say it is.
But kicking in that they've won the game.
Yeah. Yeah, butt kicking in retrospect. In the moment, you were waiting for it to become more of a butt kicking. But in truth, when the Phillies scored six runs in Game 3 against the Padres, it was the first time they'd scored more than five runs since May 17th. So we all know what kind of offense this is.
Oh, my God.
We all know the kind of offense that it is means that it is not always going to work. But against the Padres, boy, it has just been totally enough. But first, before we get to the Padres series, we'll talk a little bit about how the Phillies did against San Diego. I know John Stolness really talked about the first game of the series and Christopher Sanchez's scoreless streak and everything. But we'll wrap things up with the Padres. Talk a little bit about the White Sox, the Phillies' forthcoming opponent this weekend. Give a little life to some whispered trade rumors already here in early June. And a couple other topics we wanted to just throw at the wall here, starting with Liz. The Field of Dreams game that the Phillies are playing in against the Twins. Yeah, that's the matchup everyone was looking for out in Iowa. But they will be playing at the famous Field of Dreams Stadium in Dyersville, Iowa. And the ticket lottery has opened. Now, you know, if you're like me, any Phillies fan, you're just like, oh, I was thinking about even just the idea of being at that game, potentially. But it turns out the ticket lottery is open to Iowa residents only, Liz. What kind of Washington Nationals stuff is this?
It's open to Iowa, a state that loves baseball so much that when you live there, you cannot watch a single team on MLB.TV that is hosted in any of the surrounding states. If you live in Iowa, you're blacked out from Cubs games. You're blacked out from Brewers games. You're blacked out from other Midwest games. Ohio games, I think. Those are also around there. Like, it's a weird thing. Like, I know they want Iowa to feel special because it has this one movie. But this one single movie. But sure. Iowa, get your baseball on, please. I feel like they're all going to be, some of them are going to be more excited to see the AAA, because it's the Iowa Cubs and the St. Paul Saints.
I was going to say, you're forgetting the Iowa Cubs, Liz. The Pacific Coast League's own Iowa Cubs.
Oh, God.
You know, there's nothing like listening to the crashing of the waves in Dyersville, Iowa. as you're
famously deeply, not a landlocked state.
Deeply landlocked, standing in a field of corn. No visibility whatsoever, because it's August and the corn is high. So just a little bit of a bummer to learn that they're actively trying to keep, and I'll make it personal, Philadelphians out of Iowa. If we don't make it personal, people aren't going to get worked up about it. So, yeah, little shocking development there. But, that's still cool that the Phillies are going to be. Are you looking forward to that game? It is always a fun kind of novelty. I'll admit it. The first time it was the White Sox and Yankees, I believe, appropriately, in the first Field of Dreams game. And I still want them to do a circuit where they're going around. They do a different iconic baseball movie every year, and they can return to other like places they've used before. They have now gone back to the Field of Dreams field multiple times, but there are other very famous baseball movies that you could take advantage of and have a lot of fun with if this is something you want to do. So I don't know. I mean, you could have a Sandlot game. You could do you probably don't want to do do a Major League game, do a Rookie of the Year game, do an Angels in the Outfield game. I guess that's just at Wrigley Field. Those are just at those stadiums. So you'd have to plan
some other movie things around it. But for a while, it seemed like MLB was headed that way. They were doing a lot of, like, you know, one-off or, you know, games. Like, I know the game in Rickwood Field. They did a game at a Speedway that was a massive tragedy. Or at least hugely unsuccessful. But, you know, they really, I thought they were going to do this, and then they just stopped. Like, no, that's enough fun.
We're doing an eight-man out game this year. Oh, we're doing a money ball game this year. These are starting to get way less appealing. I think this is a bad idea now.
we're gonna do a night based on that. Remember that documentary we watched with children mouthing the words of MLB players during the Falco scandal?
That was excellent. That was an excellent documentary.
That was so good. Yeah. Friends, you can find that episode of Continued Success at the Movies on patreon.com/hittenseason. $5 a month will get you access to our, I think we did this for a couple of years, Continued Success at the Movies. We did a bunch of baseball movies, some you know, some you don't want to know.
Well, yeah, that'll be exciting. I want to see them play in that game again. And, I guess Philadelphians are going to find a way into that game. There'll be plenty of Phillies fans at that game. I don't think anybody has to worry about that just because it's in Iowa and they don't want you coming there.
I'm pretty sure that the Philly contingent in Iowa has already gathered, at least not officially, then unofficially. And they're like, no, they're trying to keep our kind out.
Well, it's like in horror movies, cornfields are always, you could call them a prominent element of horror in horror movies. It's like somebody looks out a window and sees an ominous figure standing out in the corn. It's like right now people in Iowa are looking out their windows, and every time they look away, an additional Phillies fan is standing out in their in their cornfield just waiting for the Field of Dreams game, which is, still a ways off. But yes,
I
agree.
Sometime every day a new one appears. You never know when. All of a sudden, when it's time for the actual game, there'll be, like, thousands of them standing outside your home.
But instead of ominous, it's just turning into an increasingly rowdy tailgate. You're like, try to sleep. They're playing keg roll. in any case, Liz
punched a horse.
Liz, back on March 1st, when you knew pretty much nothing about the 2026 Phillies, imagine I've arrived from the future, and I tell you that it's June, where I'm from. And then in a vacuum, I give you the following facts. And I'll say if you can stay with me here throughout all of these. If I told you at that point where I'm from, the Phillies have won 7 of their last 9.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. If I told you the Phillies were averaging 3.2 runs per game and haven't even scored 30 runs in their last 9 games total.
I'd be a little less happy about that.
But I explained that it's the same team.
I think you're lying. Does June even exist where you are?
And then I told you that the Phillies are 14-5 in one-run games this season.
I would punch you in the face.
And then I told you at the start of this Padres series that they actually had a losing record at home. Who is this team? What are we talking about when we talk about the Phillies?
I'll be tossing you in the ocean for being a witch.
Completely fair. But we saw this. We saw this against the Padres. And like the six-run game is like, oh, that's cool. They scored six runs. That's a very normal amount of offense that this team should be successfully scoring much more frequently, I would feel. You saw the scores to the season series against the Padres, Liz. Yes, the Phillies won every game. Can't argue that that's a huge positive and exactly what you want to see. But the scores of those games were 3-0, 4-3, 3-0, 3-2, 3-2, and 6-4. They never blew out the Padres. The Padres, you know, to their credit, always either kept it close or the Phillies suppressed the Padres so that they weren't able to make it any closer. Padres are also pretty famously an even more underwhelming offense than the Phillies, which is pretty staggering. But there's a ton of talent on that Padres team, and they are just not making it happen this year. And the Phillies were able to take advantage of that. In game one against the Padres this time around, Lou Gehrig Day, Aaron Nola hurled a gem. He struck out eight batters. Bryce Harper hit a two-run homer to back him up, and Alec Bohm's RBI ground out wound up being the difference, because that's the kind of offense this is. So with that being the pretty much, you can lean on that as, okay, well, that's the offense we're going to get today. Let's see what the pitching does. And like I said, you got another great game out of Nola. You got Joan Duran almost giving up the eighth inning bomb to Xander Bogaerts. Sorry, the ninth inning bomb to Xander Bogaerts. Tom McCarthy on the TV broadcast actually called the ball as gone. He called it as a home run and then had to be like, oh, nope, which I felt bad for. That was a problem he had, I think, earlier in his career, that he had trouble identifying home runs. And he has become very careful. If you are a longtime watcher of the Phillies, I think you know that he will not call it until it drops into the stands, I've noticed, which is fine. This is not a criticism of Tom McCarthy, just a pattern I noticed. And, you know, it's nothing, no harm in being sure. And this one, he called it like, you know, oh, this, and that is gone. And fortunately, it was foul by about a foot. It was foul. I mean, I thought it was gone as well, watching on TV. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, Duran recovered, got the save, hit 99 with the splitter, struck out the side, and the Phillies won 3-2. Now, you know, you're not going to complain about a win, and there are certainly enough well-played parts of this win to not be like, ah, oh, but the offense. But Liz, I mean, you know, the lesson there that Bogaerts delivered, you know, a 400-foot lesson that thankfully landed left of the foul pole, is that you're only ever that swing away when you're the Phillies from the game being blown. And there's a certain amount of fortune that must go into that. There's a certain amount of skill as well, and Duran certainly got plenty of that. But you're one swing away from being in a much more dicey situation when this is the way you play your game. So does that leave you concerned moving forward despite the success here?
It's a terrifying way to play baseball. It's a terrifying way to watch baseball. You are hanging on by your fingernails every single, you know, the top of every inning when you're at home. It's a tough thing. It's not sustainable. It's a weird experience to watch because at the end of the game, you're like, oh, God, they won. Like, I just spent 2.5 hours, like, in the fetal position in front of the television for no reason.
It's exhausting.
Except for the Phillies. Yeah, it's exhausting.
Pulls the life out of you, for sure. The bad news is that's the best kind of baseball there is. You never come out of this feeling more alive. Yes, you're drained, but you also feel more alive watching baseball like that. As the summer goes on, you'll see what I mean. Game two, Christopher Sanchez's scoreless streak, as we know, famously ended at 50 2/3 innings. Still, as John Stolness gushed on our midweek episode, the most ever for a left-handed pitcher and the fifth longest scoreless streak of all time. Sanchez has also, you know, naturally has the all-time Citizens Bank Park record for scoreless inning streak as well. I mean, all in all, Liz, just to stop here and admire it, Christopher Sanchez, man. What a story. What a pitcher. What a guy to have. Imagine this team without him. Pick an angle. There's not a bad one to view Christopher Sanchez from. The shots of his family, watching him and getting to be there. And, yeah, just the kind of pitcher he's become. The intensity, the quiet intensity with the occasional spasms of celebration as he comes off the field. I mean, he's an ace. The Phillies have two aces, which is more than some teams can say. Some teams don't even have one. And it's just been awesome to watch a pitcher like Christopher Sanchez have the kind of success Christopher Sanchez has had.
It's been a thrill and a pleasure to watch him. And I feel like he's not always very demonstrative, but he is sometimes. And I think that fits the crowd really well. You know, he knows when to let out the fist pump and, you know, and a big growl. That's always great to see because you know that he recognizes the moment. And the crowd does as well. You know, I don't want to imagine the Phillies without him. The last couple of years would have been drastically different in a really awful way. I can't say for sure it would have been awful, but I think it would have been less fun because watching him do well, watching him find himself, watching him just sort of quietly, just very quietly, just work his way up in the rotation to being what he is, just one of the biggest Phillies success stories, I think, of all time.
Very quietly.
He's broken the record for left-handed scoreless. For a left-handed scoreless inning streak, that is an all-timer of a success story.
I mean, he's up there. He's up there with some big-time historic names now. And you're right. It feels like it all happened very quietly. Unlike with Adolis Garcia, who people are looking to make a little more noise, and thankfully, in this series, you saw a bit of that. In Game 2, you had an RBI double from Adolis Garcia, scoring the Phillies' first run. I mean... anything you can get from a guy who's been struggling like Adolis Garcia, you take it. And when you start, you see 2 days in a row, which this was his second day in a row with a hit, you were like, okay. I'm not calling this a pattern yet, but yeah, this is better. This is certainly better than before. Then you had JT Realmuto, who felt responsible for calling the fastball that lost Christopher Sanchez his scoreless streaks, he said later, and then hit the lead-taking solo shot the following inning, because you absolutely have to win that baseball game. There's no guarantee that even though the Phillies narratively had to win that game, there was no guarantee they were going to win that game. You've seen them lose when in a movie they would have won 1,000 times.
Oh, so many.
Thankfully, Realmuto came through. He took the lead back with his solo shot, and you got another one from Kyle Schwarber to provide the smallest of cushions. And the Phillies needed it because Brad Keller pitches for this team. He hit Xander Bogaerts with a pitch with the bases loaded.
Yeah,
you love it. You love to see that from one of your high leverage relievers. Brad Keller just not having a very reliable season out of the Phillies bullpen so far.
We were all really excited about him.
And, rightfully so. He was coming off a great season with Toronto as a guy who comes in late from your bullpen. The Phillies needed another guy like that. We felt like, they had moved on from Matt Strom. And we're ready, for somebody else to step into a role like that. And Keller was a guy they put into that mix for good reason. He's still being given opportunities. I expect him to continue to probably get those opportunities until you can really string together a series of bad outcomes. But in general, I think that just puts him in a unreliable place for me. And that's always a little harder, or it's always easier for high leverage relievers to wind up in that space because they only come in situations that are pretty, tend to be stressful. They come in 7th, 8th, 9th inning. For this team plays with a lot of slim leads. And if you're a guy who, comes into a game and allows a run or two, well, that means you're going to blow some leads for this team and it makes you less reliable. So Keller, he's got some rounding out to do, keep the ball down at least. Thankfully, they still have Joan Duran. He comes in, cleans it up, gets his 14th save of the season, and the Phillies win 3-2 again in Game 2. Game 3, get to turn to Zach Wheeler, coming off a 4-home run appearance against the Dodgers. He looked awesome. He didn't allow a hit until the 6th inning, and then he was victimized by Manny Machado with a 2-run homer in the 7th. Bryson Stott spun a dumpy little grounder into left. That got him to a 2-out RBI. And Adolis Garcia, biggest offensive output of the day, clobbers his first home run since May 6th against the A's. Since May 6th against the A's. He was 1 month out from his last home run for the Phillies. Garcia, if you saw this clip, that home run felt real good. You saw the bat kind of melt out of his hands. I'm not saying anything's happening in particular right now. Still a very small sample size, but boy, if you could imagine Adolis Garcia hitting home runs and flipping bats like he did when he hit that home run in like August, that's a good sign for this Phillies team. That's a guy you want going off and being excited and just an awesome, fun player to watch. Rangers fans have been jumping into the conversation a little bit and saying, hey, those years he was an absolute stud for the Rangers in 22 and 23, he really didn't get going until the second half. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second, but there is some hope, I think, statistically for Adolis Garcia. Trey Turner can still slide. He slipped in on a Brandon Marsh grounder for their 5th run of the game, and an Alec Bohm RBI single delivered the Phillies' 6th run. Jose Alvarado got hit by Jackson Merrill to make it 6-4 with a 2-run home run in the 9th, then closed out business, allowing the Phillies to sweep the season series with the Padres. So Liz, you know, second sweep of the Padres, took care of business, didn't lose to them a single time this season. Like we said, kind of makes the Dodgers series loss more of a memory. Do you feel like, you know, the Phillies lost two series, then they swept the Padres, then they lost a series, then they swept the Padres, and that was coming off the initial hot streak with Don Mattingly. Do you feel like this is all still part of the same Don Mattingly boost, looking at like that point in the season when he took over until now? Is this all still the same collection of success, or did that kind of die out and now you're seeing the Phillies, you know, begin a new cycle here, starting with the Padres sweep?
It's been a while since Mattingly came on board, so I would have a hard time saying that it's all part of the same thing. I would love to say it's all part of the same thing, because that feels really good. That would be a good thing. But, yeah, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen this team even out to an extent. And they are going to need to, like, you know, go on another heater where they win 10 of 11 or something, or you know, mm-hmm. preferably even more. But they are going to need that. Like, now that they've stabilized to an extent, the Padres were a very good team to stabilize against. The White Sox, who they'll face this weekend, are a scrappy and a handful of a team, but they are a team that they can also beat. So, you know, this is an opportunity for them to really kind of put forth the intense success that they will need to have to make up for the intense lack of success they kind of spiraled through very early in the season. There's just, you know, there's just going to be something that needs to pop up and nullify that. They're just kind of still one of those teams hovering around 500. So to pull away from the rest of the pack, you're going to need to get pretty hot at least one more time to differentiate yourself. So we'll see what happens. But so far, what we definitely know is that the Philadelphia Phillies can beat the San Diego Padres. That's not a problem. Charlotte Varnes for The Athletic was writing about Adolis Garcia and his season, how it's gone, how he's tried to address his struggles at the plate, and Phillies right-handed hitting in general. She writes that the Phillies right-handed hitters are hitting .204 with a .581 OPS. Now, you probably aren't asking, but I wanted to go through this anyway. Who are the Phillies right-handed hitters? Well, that'd be your best right-handed hitter on the Phillies is Trey Turner, who is famously struggling to get going this season. He's hitting .228 with 7 home runs in 250 at-bats and 59 strikeouts against 17 walks. He's knocked in 20 runs. JT Realmuto, also, you know, scuffling down there in the 210s with Alec Boehm as far as batting average goes. Edmundo Sosa obviously doesn't play in as many games as those other guys, but you can throw him in there as well. Same kind of tier of right-handed hitting as Realmuto and Boehm, just not really, you know, making a lot of contact, not really getting the ball to go places where fielders aren't, but also just not doing a good job of putting the bat on the ball solidly. Then you have other experiments and guys like Felix Reyes and Otto Kemp, both of whom proved not super capable of being the right-handed hitter the Phillies need. It really comes down to Adolis Garcia, the latest iteration of the one-year outfield Dave Dombrowski experiment, who gets $10 million to rebound from some kind of bad season. Adolis Garcia has changed his stance. He's fiddled with his swing, according to Varnes. He came in on an off day, which was characterized as rare, not for him, but for players in general. But he came in to do some work, again, offensively, because he's really trying hard to pull out of these struggles that he's in. Padres series saw some marked improvement, it was noted, for Garcia, albeit over just 3 games. But if you've been watching him all year, waiting for that bat to let you keep his awesome outfield arm around, almost anything other than nothing is an improvement. So, Liz, where are you at on Adolis Garcia after this series, which you saw a blip of potential as he singled, doubled, and then homered in Game 3, and you saw a little bit of the Garcia you were hoping could be the first success story as far as these acquisitions go for Dave Dombrowski the Phillies have gotten in a couple of years?
I'm looking for any reason to keep him around, only because I really like looking at him. He's got great arms. He's really cute. He's very excited. I like him on the Phillies, and I think he really likes it there, too. I have no choice but to get excited about this and put all of my eggs into this basket as far as Adolis Garcia is concerned. I want him to succeed very, very much.
Garcia's got a chance here. He's got a chance to be a difference maker. He's got a chance to become a unicorn, a right-handed hitting power hitter in the Phillies lineup, but also just in general, a right-handed hitting outfielder who became the guy the team needed him to be. The Phillies weren't the only one looking for a guy like this. And, you know, statistics would indicate so far they, quote-unquote, haven't found him. But a chance for improvement, you know, again, it's still early enough in the season that you could say, yeah, he got off to a rocky start, but he had an okay year. And he's got a chance to be a difference maker because, like I said, the Phillies have been looking for a guy to fill this role forever. Trey Turner has a chance to be a difference maker as well. That's a different kind of story. Just one right-handed bat starting to regularly hit, like, oh, man, 270 would do wonders for this offense. At least really? A little more of the time. And Garcia, for what it's worth, is, like I said, historically a second-half hitter, and his splits actually indicate he doesn't have more than one hot month in a row. Good numbers in April, June, and August, with drop-offs in May, July, and September. This is the nature, I would say, of a hard-hitting slugger like Garcia. You know, even if he's hitting at his ceiling, you're still going to be dealing with this. It's less of an ebb and flow. It's more like the surging of an angry sea. But Garcia doesn't have a great April this year, even though I just listed that as one of the months where he typically does have good numbers. So, as we know, this Padres series allowed for at least the fantasy of a right-handed power hitter in the Phillies' cleanup spot, the spot where Garcia has spent the majority of his career hitting. It'd be great to be able to slot him in there again and just have that be his job, because Alec Boehm, God love him, he ain't the cleanup hitter that was promised. But there's a grim aspect also to this story of hope, as there always seems to be with these Phillies at this stage in the game, and it's typically the same as this one. Charlotte Varnes kind of laid it out. Garcia, not only, you know, is it encouraging to see him attempting to hit and reevaluate some things so he can get better at hitting, but he also must hit. He has to, because the backup plan is, as she kind of suggested, I don't know, platoon him with Gabriel Rincones Jr., whose season is only 29 games due to injury.
As we've said it, it's what we've said on the last couple of roundtables. There's no backup plan, which is why Adolis Garcia is just going to stay there. He has to hit, but he also doesn't. Doesn't really matter, because there's nothing else to do with him that's going to actually improve the situation.
The Phillies' lack of
him getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. And their lack of depth requires that a plan, you know, the plan of, oh, well, let's hire this guy and let's sign this guy and see if he can bounce back and be the kind of effective player he was a couple years ago. It requires this plan and most of their plans to work, because if they don't, well, do you think if the Phillies did have better alternatives, if there was like a young outfielder who was kind of looking ready to go in AAA, that Garcia might already be in a more evolved role? Like, they're not going to cut him. They paid him $10 million. It's that same kind of situation, but, you know, they might give him less, you know, platoon him, you know, give him less to do until he figures something out. I mean, if there was an actual option, do you think his role would be different by now?
Completely. If there was someone who could do even a little bit better, I'm sure they'd be there. Because we've said how he's hitting is not good and is not acceptable for a team that has the expectations from outside and inside that the Phillies do. It's just not good enough. But again, what are they going to do?
I hate that so many conversations about the Phillies have ended with that question. Off-season, regular season, you know, bullpen help, right-handed outfielder, which I will reiterate, the most common position and most common handedness. And yet somehow the wall you always run into is like, yeah, well, what options are out there? And, you know, on the one hand, there are people who have jobs whose jobs are to find those guys out there that we say aren't out there. But then sometimes they're also going, yeah, there's just nothing out there. And it just feels crazy. It feels crazy that a team with this kind of payroll can so many times point to a problem and be like, yeah, but what else are they going to do? You know, and you're like, all right, well, cool. Now, speaking of things, this is a great transition, because now we are going to talk about things that the Phillies could do, or it's been stated they could do. Let's just put it that way, because, you know, it's June. A couple weeks from now, will be the talk of the trade deadline will be heating up, and teams that are looking to contend, I think you're going to start seeing the split from all these teams that are hovering around 500. You're going to see the ones that take themselves seriously, and you're going to see the ones that are willing to sell off players and not take their success any seriously. And one of the names that you saw as a potential big midseason acquisition coming into this season was a young man by the name of Tarek Skubal, who pitches for the Detroit Tigers, you know, largely considered the best pitcher in baseball. Now, at the time, the point everyone would make was, yeah, but the Tigers were good last year. Why would they reach the trade, even with a free agency approaching, why would they look at Tarek Skubal and be like, what do you think we can get for this guy in a season where they're contending, and he is a large, if not top contributor to their contention? Well, the Tigers are not contending. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Central Divisions, but honestly, more teams are doing well than extremely poorly. The Tigers are unfortunately not one of those teams. On top of that, Tarek Skubal himself has suffered a hiccup this season. On May 4th, it was announced that he will have surgery for loose bodies in his left elbow. That's a procedure that typically takes a couple of months to come back from, about 2 or 3 months. So Tarek Skubal himself is not in 100% pitching shape right now. Despite that, still a desired entity, and 2 or 3 months isn't a whole season. And so with this information out there and the trade deadline approaching, you're going to see the rumor mill start to hum a bit. CBS Sports listed for Skubal specifically every contender as a possible landing spot, then went on to list pretty much every contender except the Phillies, which was interesting. They said the Braves, Blue Jays, Cubs, Dodgers, Padres, and Yankees are all great fits for Tarek Skubal, and that if the Tigers are smart, they read, they'll pay down some or all of the $9 million that will still be owed to Skubal. But over on the Foul Territory pod, Ken Rosenthal said, I just don't rule out Dombrowski and Middleton in a situation like this. Now, that is very, very light commentary, kind of just words that were said in a particular order. Doesn't prove or report or hint at anything, simply that they're the kind of guys who have brought in big name players before, or like the biggest name player before. That's something they're capable of. I'll agree with that. But the biggest words came from Jeff Passan, who was definitely banging the loudest drum about this. All he was saying was who was the best fit for each team at the trade deadline at the end of July. And Jeff Passan wrote that the best fit for the Phillies was Tarek Skubal or Taylor Ward. He hedged his bets a little bit, but he did say Tarek Skubal. And this is what he wrote. Considering how good Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, and Brandon Marsh have been, it's embarrassing that the Phillies have scored fewer runs than Kansas City and Boston. That is embarrassing. It's yes. Not that the remainder of Philadelphia's offense is slightly below average. It's that the other six have been downright bad. And so while, yes, a rotation of Skubal, Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler, and Jesus Luzardo would be the unquestioned best in baseball, it's fair to wonder how the Phillies plan to salvage their offense. And then he points to a couple of other possible contenders, Wilson Contreras, if he didn't play the same positions as Schwarber and Harper, Isak Paredes, who could replace Alec Bohm at third. But seeing as left and right field have been hazmat areas for the Phillies, Taylor Ward fits snugly into either spot, as well as atop a lineup with Schwarber second, Harper third, Marsh on cleanup duty. More needs to be done, but that would be a good start for a team with as many everyday holes as the Phillies. So he says Skubal and then kind of backs off and says, yeah, but the offense is obviously a bigger problem. You add Taylor Ward to that, a guy who has been in Philly's right-handed outfield bat rumors for a couple of years now, a couple of trade deadlines, and who is now with the Orioles and playing very well for a team that also wants to go to the postseason. I want to go back to Skubal because this kind of feeds into, Liz, the overall idea the Phillies had in trading for Jesus Luzardo, which was at that time, we got to improve this offense. How do we do that? We don't know, and there's not a lot of options out there. So why don't we just feed a strength and get better, like become very, very good at pitching and, hope the offense can take care of itself. It's not, the most rock solid plan, but no plans are going into a season. The Phillies adding Tarek Skubal, even coming off this surgery he's going to need for loose bodies and everything. I mean, that's an incredible rotation, Liz. That's an incredible rotation that is certainly up there with the 2011 rotation and... Whew, I don't think the Phillies are close to this or even something that they would consider doing, but it does kind of track with the same philosophy of, look, if we can't find these mysterious bats that don't exist, why not just go totally overboard on the pitching staff? Does this have appeal to you, even with Skubal, having the kind of season he's had with his injury?
It definitely interests me. I mean, how could it not? It's Tarek Skubal. The Phillies, I think the Phillies could sort of figure things out there. He's injured, right?
Yeah, like on May 4th, they announced he was going to have surgery.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they're willing to trade him, let's get him. Let's get him before the Dodgers do.
We're also assuming the Phillies have things that the Tigers want to trade for Tarek Skubal. That's also going to be an issue here. Are the Phillies even capable of trading for Tarek Skubal is another whole other conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking right now at a headline that says Dave Roberts says Dodgers have the capital to trade for Tigers ace Tarek Skubal. Quote, they would go ballistic. Yeah, no kidding. Because I've done it like every
that's
year
so boring.
For the past 5 years.
Yeah, that's really uninteresting to me. Yeah, just I'm not saying, oh, let another team have a player. It's more like, yeah, you guys are like, this is obnoxious. This would frankly be obnoxious. But they do, and they can, and you can't stop them. That's the Dodgers.
No. We also need to get him to prevent the Braves from getting him. Like, they're interested, probably.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to be elbowing people out of the way. And if Dave Dombrowski wants to convince me, you know, he's still got sharp elbows, that'd be a good way to do it. But again, you know, what they give up is just not a factor that we're considering right now, because these are all just very much in the whispered rumor or just casual suggestion phase. And nothing we're saying is even close to real. Just a concept. And thinking of nothing else other than Tarek Skubal joining this rotation is like, yeah, that's a season-defining, if not franchise-defining move. And, I guess you could say there'd be a little bit of excitement about it. So, just some early things to ruminate on as trade deadline season gets underway. This weekend, however, the Phillies will be facing the Chicago White Sox, one of those darling little Central teams that's having a far less catastrophic season than predicted. The White Sox are currently at 33-29, second place in the American League Central, and three up in the wild card race. Well, the wild card standings, it's not really a race at this point. They've won 7 of 10 and have a positive run differential of 11. Just a reminder that even though they pulled out of their tailspin, the Phillies' run differential is still negative 22. Munetaka Murakami. Boy, so much for needing an adjustment period to Major League Baseball. The White Sox Japanese slugger has 20 home runs and a 938 OPS. He is what was promised and profiling dangerously close to Kyle Schwarber, probably the closest guy to that unicorn in the league. But Murakami did just hit the injured list. He's got a hamstring strain that they're saying will keep the May 2026 American League Rookie of the Month out of the lineup for weeks. So, unfortunately for him, and unfortunately for Philly, for White Sox fans, and unfortunately for anybody who likes watching a slugger go nuts, the Phillies are not going to face Murakami this weekend, which is actually very fortunate for them. However, the White Sox still have guys like Miguel Vargas. The Athletics power rankings, they name-checked Miguel Vargas specifically, saying if you eliminate Kevin McGonigal, the Tigers rookie phenom, from the mix, who's primarily a shortstop, Vargas is tied for the F4 lead among American League third basemen with 1.9, is third in weighted runs created plus with 134, and tied for first in homers and first in runs scored. A lot of offense being generated by a single person in Miguel Vargas. You also got Tristan Peters, the shortstop. The Southside Sox says Tristan Peters has quickly quelled worries. Outfielder. I said SS for Southside, and I just said shortstop, but he is an outfielder. Tristan Peters has quickly quelled worries about the outfield. His exceptional 293, 354, 415 slash line and stellar glove have prevented losses and saved several games that a 1.6 WAR doesn't adequately reflect. But at least his 2.9. This is not a stat that I feel like we need to read here. He's good. He's really good in the White Sox outfield. They've also got Colson Montgomery, Sam Antonacci making great contact in that lineup. Davis Martin in their rotation has really broken out this year. But again, Southside Sox says that Brian Hudson, Grant Taylor, Sean Newcomb, and Anthony Kay combined for a sub-170 ERA and 77 strikeouts in nearly 78 innings in May. So the White Sox are doing it. The White Sox are having a good, fun. This is when we say that bad teams aren't fun. I maintain that take. Like, you can't be a bad team and be fun to watch, because that's just those things just don't make sense together. But the White Sox, a team that's like 4 or 5 games over 500, kind of surprising their fans a bit, getting breakout seasons from young guys or guys they pulled off the scrap heap from other teams. You know, the only kind of teams that the White Sox build. They are a fun team this year. This is a fun team for their fans to watch. There are certainly issues. Pitching is solid, but command is not always sharp. Martin and Sean Burke lead the American League in wild pitches with 5. Anthony Kay leads all of baseball in hit batsmen with 10. You know who's closing for the White Sox, Liz?
Who?
A young man named Sir Anthony Dominguez. Yeah, and they're young. Okay. The offense is inconsistent. Their only starting player over 26 years old is Andrew Benintendi, the DH. The best hitting third inning team in Major League Baseball is the White Sox, and the worst, one of the worst hitting fourth inning teams in baseball is the Chicago White Sox. Surely that's something to exploit there. But Liz, this is a young, home run happy lineup with a rotation that has enough strong arms to hold a lead and is, fortunately for the Phillies, without its top slugger. Their bullpen is soft. Everyone's waiting for them to call up a hot young pitching prospect named Ben Peoples to help out, but he's not on the 40-man. The White Sox are not a team I can say they have an excuse not to beat every time. You know, that little thing I say. I don't think this really disqualifies. The White Sox are kind of a handful this year. They've been beating up on a lowly Tigers team, and they are more over 500 than the Phillies are. In many ways, like the Dodgers were a test for the Phillies are kind of a test for the White Sox. While their records are shockingly similar, the Phillies were projected to go much farther in 2026 than the White Sox and have largely rounded into shape since Don Mattingly took over for Rob Thompson. So facing the White Sox, it's sort of like, okay, well, this is one of the big teams in the National League and we're a scrappy, you know, wild card American League team. Let's see how we do against this team. I think they're going to come out with something to prove. Do you feel similarly?
I think so. They definitely want to look good and prove that they could do things without their big star. That definitely makes them dangerous to the Phillies, who have a history of losing to teams that they shouldn't, but they really shouldn't lose to them. Murakami was the biggest threat, like by far, and at least to me, and without him they're definitely not scary at all.
Yeah, the pitchers they're going to be throwing at the Phillies, just, you know, again, one lefty, two righties, so that's always good news for the Phillies. And the two success stories you're going to see in Anthony Kay and Sean Burke starting on Friday and Saturday are guys who are, they're having solid seasons, but they're not having, like, you know, breakout years or anything, but they're kind of, they're part of the supporting cast that's been consistent enough that the White Sox have been able to capitalize. But, you know, regardless, this is a very exciting season for White Sox fans so far. They could potentially and realistically have four All-Stars. I mean, that is fun for a team that is rebuilding and is still, very, you know, very much in the rebuild stage, but starting to perhaps see the fruits of their labors. You know, that is an exciting time, and that's honestly the kind of team I feel like we've seen beat the Phillies were hoping to see them rack up some wins. So this is not a team to take lightly, and I hope the Phillies pound them into the dirt. But before we finish up here, Liz, in our Friday episode of Hittin' Season, there are some, speaking of, you know, forthcoming July baseball events, the All-Star Game will be happening in Philadelphia soon enough. We're just like, what, 5-6 weeks away from the All-Star Game returning to Philadelphia for the first time since 1996. We'll have plenty of content here out on Hittin' Season about the All-Star Game, and over on the Patreon, we are already cooking up our All-Star edition of the Dirty Inning, talking about what the Phillies, you know, talking about the 1996 Phillies and going on an adventure with that particularly underwhelming squad. But before we do that, and before all that season hits, they did release that the food items at the All-Star Game and what that menu will include. And Liz, I would love for you to take us on a rundown through what we can expect to gorge ourselves with at Citizens Bank Park at the All-Star Game.
All right. So there are four. They put together four different meals, but unfortunately, only one of them will be served. You can vote in bracket style. So
unbelievable! They're making us choose from these what?
Yeah, they're making us choose because they're extremely rude and stupid. Anyway, so we've got the Declaration Dog, a smoked Wagyu beef frank laid out on a toasted pretzel roll, topped with a candied bacon crumble, apple cider gastrique, and crispy shallot and micro mustard greens. Yeah, we made candied bacon. I said, what is this guy's name? Rich Grab, Director of Culinary Innovation at Aramark Sports and Entertainment. Thick-cut bacon that's cooked down with a little bit of bourbon, brown sugar, and some seasoning. Then it is chopped up and crumbled. Now we have the Liberty Stack, a buttermilk brined hot chicken thigh placed on a brown butter maple glazed donut with charred peach bourbon compote, aged cheddar, and pickled Fresnos. We've got the Revolutionary Rib Melt, smoked short rib, aged provolone, charred onion jam, fried peppers, and pickled butter on a pressed brioche roll with a side bowl of beef consomme, though it has been spelled consume in this piece.
Which is what consume. I will be doing to it if it is the winner.
Yes, absolutely. All right. And then we've got Betsy's Banana Ice Cream Sundae. Banana pudding with vanilla soft serve, topped with crushed vanilla wafers, peanut brittle, hot fudge, strawberry sauce, and toast, and a toasted marshmallow cloud. Right, red, white, and blue sprinkles scattered throughout. And, of course, served in an all-star souvenir cap.
We got a vote between a rib melt and a banana ice cream? Like, these are just different types of things. This is not fair.
I know.
This is the biggest injustice, I think we could say. It's not the one out of four star game. It's the all-star game. You put them all on the menu because they are all representative of the Phillies' desire to make $18 for a single concession item. I don't think it's fair. I'm a sucker for Wagyu beef. I'm also a sucker for an onion jam. Putting it on a rib melt, going to do wonders. I don't know what we're doing here. Why do we have to choose? It's the 250th birthday of the country and the cradle of liberty. Why are we cutting corners here? I don't have to vote for this stuff.
Where is the freedom? Where is the freedom in this? We are free people, and we should be free to eat any and all of these.
Yeah.
They're really making it difficult because they've turned this into like a banana pudding, like a banana pudding, banana split, and I'm having a hard time with, because I like the rib melt as well. That sounds delicious, but this ice cream sundae looks really good.
You can't be putting a dessert item on the scent. You got to have four dessert items at least on a different voting situation.
Exactly.
Don't make this all the same thing. This is
I'm really upset at Aramark for doing it this way. I'm angry. I want all of them.
Who would have thought The novelty concession segment at the end of the episode would be the one that got us the most heated. But that's what happens when the Phillies sweep a team. Got to get heated about something. It might as well be a rib melt. Well, hey, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season, almost. But this weekend, the Phillies will be taking on the White Sox. Your starters for Friday night's game at 6:40 at Citizens Bank Park are going to be Anthony Kay for the White Sox versus Jesus Luzardo for the Phillies. On Saturday afternoon, you get Sean Burke and Andrew Painter with first pitch at 4:05. And in Game 3, you'll see David Sandlin take on Aaron Nola. That one could get messy. Sandlin is not one of the better White Sox pitchers, and this is an opportunity for the Phillies to show off that new six-run offense thing they tried in Game 3 against the Padres. Then again, is this not exactly the pitcher of the group who will probably have a no-hitter going into the seventh? You never know with this team, but you do know that they're coming off a season sweep of the Padres and winning seven of their last nine games, so that's a pretty good place to be, no matter who you're beating, and the White Sox are a completely beatable team as well. Liz, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I got nothing. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the summer baseball. Get ready for the All-Star game, kids.
Yep. The heat isn't so insufferable that you can't leave your house yet. And it should be a beautiful weekend of baseball. So get out there and enjoy it. That'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week at anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.